Today's lecture is going to be on cyclic compounds. So on Tuesday we worked with rotamers, which are one type of conformer, or conformational isomer. Today we're going to see conformational isomers of cyclic compounds. Let me start out first with a little demonstration of model sets. So how many of you have purchased model sets already? Have you used them to start visualizing?
Yeah, it's a blessing, actually.
And I do highly recommend that you get model sets because, for example, if you had a tetrahedral carbon, if you look at it from the bottom of the carbon, as I tried to talk about when we were visualizing, you can very easily see that 120-degree angle that I was talking about. Now, if you haven't gotten the model kits yet, the way it works is you've got these individual pieces, which you put two of them together, and that makes one tetrahedral position. Then, let's say take three of them and try to bend them into a ring. I'm not going to do so because I've already kind of damaged this set from doing the demonstration yesterday, but you can see that if I try to connect these together to make a bond, that there's a huge amount of strain that I'm going to be putting on the model set. So this is something that your textbook refers to as angle strain. And can you imagine why this would cause the potential energy of a molecule to increase? What's going on when you strain a molecule in this way? Yeah. Well, it's like you're trying to break a bond. So one idea that's presented in the chapter is that when you have direct overlap of orbitals, when they are directly overlapping with each other, that makes a stronger bond. Stronger bond means that more energy is released because there's more interaction of the negative charge between the nuclei with the nuclei. In a case like this, the bonds end up getting distorted. So there's not the good overlap there. If there's not as good an overlap, that means the bond's not as strong, which means that not as much energy has been released, which means that the molecule is in a higher potential energy state. Another way we can think about it is, what is the geometry of a normal tetrahedral center? What is the bond angle that we would normally find on a tetrahedral center? 109.5. But in this kind of molecule, what would the bond angle have to be in cyclopropane? Well, in a equilateral triangle, what is the bond angle that we find? 60 degrees. So 60 degrees versus 109.5, that's a huge deviation of bond angle, and that's part of the origin of the strain. Now, what if we put one more carbon, make cyclobutane? Well, cyclobutane, as you can see, I am able to make the model, but even once I do so, you can see how it's still puckering out a little bit at the sides. So this would have roughly a 90-degree bond angle, although in real life, there's ever so slight bit of puckering that occurs. So two ends will naturally end up being a little bit different, a little bit out of plane with the other two carbons. So the angle ends up being more like, I think it's 88 degrees. I just suddenly have forgotten that. But near 90 degrees, still not the 109.5 that the molecule would like to be. But then add one more carbon to it. And we'll find that we quite easily close the ring off. I won't make you memorize the types of values that are quoted in the chapter, but if you look through a table that shows you how much strain there is per carbon in a five-membered ring, it's a very, very small amount of energy. We haven't gotten to kinetics, but we'll find out that in reactions that can cause ring closure, that cause a ring to form, that five-member rings are very favorable because it's easy for the two ends to find each other. Even easier is a six-member ring, which, just a little bit of geometry, what should be the angle in a pentagon if it's a perfect pentagon? Anybody remember how to do that geometrically? So it's 108 degrees. Now, if we had a hexagon, what what should the bond angle be there? Or not bond angle, what would the angle between any two sides of a hexagon be? 120. But it doesn't end up being 120 in real life, because this is not just going to exist in a plane, it's going to exist as a three-dimensional structure. Unfortunately, this model is on its last legs, but there we go. That's the chair form, which is one thing we're coming to in just a moment. But this is the lowest energy conformation of a six-member ring. And if you notice, as I wrap this around, it has sort of a zigzag pattern to it, which, since I haven't shown you a model before, let me open this up and show you that as a consequence of having tetrahedral geometry, when you link one tetrahedron to the next, you can see that we generate this kind of zigzag pattern, which is why when we've been writing structures, I've been writing structures in that way. I don't know if I ever took the time to mention that small point earlier in the quarter. So let me write some of what I've just told you down, and then we'll move into talking about the chair forms of cyclohexane. So first, cyclopropane, which, as I said, would have to have 60-degree angles between bonds. But that's highly unfavorable, and we call that angle strain, which could be called or defined as higher potential energy caused by distortion of bonds caused by deviation of molecular geometry from ideal angles. So for cyclopropane, I had said 60 degrees. I'll check the book later on to make sure that I've remembered this correctly, but roughly 88 degrees in cyclobutane. And so these two structures are highly strained. Highly strained does not mean they can't exist, though. So cyclopropane is a perfectly isolatable molecule. Cyclobutane, or relatives to cyclobutane, can be synthesized, not necessarily easily, but there's one super important molecule that has a four-member ring in it, penicillin. So it is not that unusual. Again, though, once we get to a five-membered ring, because the angle is approximately 108 degrees, much more closely matches that 109.5 that we'd rather, that the tetrahedral carbon would rather have. And then when we get to cyclohexane, it is not planar. And so the bond angle actually ends up being 109.5 degrees. So there's little or no angle strain in those molecules. If you've read the chapter, you know what happens if we go beyond six carbons. Has anybody had a chance to read the chapter and know what does happen? Let me back that up and ask this question. How many of you have read the chapter? Okay. If you don't remember, that's okay, because it is kind of buried in that information. When you add a seventh carbon, you'll actually end up causing just a little bit of strain in the molecule. And we'll get into reasons why that is once we finish talking about cyclohexane. But it's roughly carbon 7 through 11 where you'll have a little bit of angle strain. They can be formed, but then there becomes a real-life problem in forming those rings, because the longer a chain that you make, if you start out with a linear compound, the more difficult it is for the two ends of those compounds to find each other and form a ring. So there are ways to make them. They're not that unstable if you make them, but they're less frequently encountered than the 5 or 6-membered rings. So I'll just summarize it this way. Rings with 7 through 11 carbons have a very small amount of strain. Past 11 carbons rings again have no strain. Now, some texts get very deeply into the structure of 3, 4, 5-membered rings. Your text, though, is somewhat simplifies them, which I'm actually fine with because we're mostly going to be dealing with 6-membered rings as our cyclic examples through the quarter. So let's spend the rest of today focusing on cyclohexane. Now, the first thing we've got to do is learn how to draw cyclohexane, and not in the flat form that I have up here. Is I've suddenly blanked on your name. Not Caroline. Caroline, okay. As you stated a moment ago, this molecule I wrote in a chair conformation. And we'll find out in a minute why that chair conformation is, in fact, the lowest energy conformation of a cyclohexane ring. Now, chemists sometimes can be rather creative, especially in the way that they name or visualize things. So I don't know exactly how this came about. Again, maybe a little bit of creativity, maybe a little too much time spent smelling the solvents in OCAM or something. But if you look at the zigzag form, somewhere along the way, imagine, well, what if you were to sit on this molecule? If like one raised part of it was like the back of a chair, and this was like the legs of an easy chair. So this is called the chair conformation. How to write it on paper? Well, as your textbook recommends, start with 2 parallel lines. And general convention is to have them tilted to the right like this. It would not be wrong to do it the other way, but this is the way that the textbook is most frequently going to do it. Once you have the 2 parallel lines, you draw V's at the top and the bottom. And that will generate this chair shape. Now, in the chair shape, there are 2 different kinds of substituents. And so let me write those separately. First, if I grab the model again, and you know, since I've been referring to the model a bit, why don't I have a little bit of light on in the class? Can you still see the notes fairly well with the light on? Okay. So if you notice the model, I've got it held by 3 positions. I'm holding on to it, resting on me. By 3 positions that are pointed straight down from 3 of the carbons, and then I have 3 substituents that are pointed straight up from the different carbons. And notice that, for example, the carbon that's closest to you right now, from your left and your right, the ring seems to be pointed in the up direction, and the group that is pointed, oriented vertically, is also pointed straight up. So we can do the same thing on paper. On every point in the ring where the ring is going up itself, then that substituent is pointed up. On the positions of the ring where the ring itself is pointed down, then the substituents on the ring are pointed down. Since these are parallel to an axis that you could imagine goes through the cyclohexane ring, imagine that you spun the cyclohexane ring around that axis. These are therefore called axial substituents. Now, the slightly trickier ones to draw are the other substituents, which, if we were to look at a model or think about it on paper, think about the way that I talked about writing tetrahedral carbons before. When we were using the dash wedge system, anytime that we had 2 plane lines coming together,
the wedge and the dash have to continue pointing in that same direction. So use that same logic here. If we have the two lines coming from the ring, and then one substituent pointing out away from the ring, well, the other substituent is going to have to point out away from the ring. If we look at the model, we can see that where the vertical substituent is pointed up, it's only very slightly so, but the other substituent on that position is pointed ever so slightly down. So wherever an axial position is pointed down, the other substituent will be pointed up. And you write it parallel to one of the other bonds that's in the ring. So let me write in those six positions. These are known as equatorial substituents. Why? Because it's like they're sticking out on their equator. So you need to practice drawing these, because aside from the fact there's a test coming up, we're going to be using cyclohexane rings. And if you're slow writing the structure, then you're just going to fall behind taking notes, and I don't want that to happen. So please, even though this looks easy on paper, believe me, the first time you try to do it, some of you are going to have really funky-looking structures. So questions about what axial and what equatorial are. Well, then let's look at how we can translate a flat drawing into one of these chair structures. Oh, but you know, before I do that, now let's go ahead and get that first. It's a little simpler. So an example, but before we do the example, I need a little terminology. So there is a term that's a general term, vicinal. Is anyone good with languages and could guess what vicinal means?
Close by.
Close by. Do you happen to know the word for neighbor in Spanish? Which is from Latin root, which means neighbor. So vicinal means that you have two substituents that are right next door, neighboring carbons. So it refers to neighboring positions. Another common term, geminal. Which, anybody have a guess what that would refer to? Twin, that's right. Think of the constellation Gemini. So this refers to two substituents that are on the same position. And so I'm going to write a vicinal dihalide. And I'm going to make it a relatively simple compound. Put one bromine and one chlorine on it. Let's say that we wanted to translate this now to a chair form. Now, should I put the bromine at an axial or an equatorial position? Well, later on, I'll ask that question in a slightly more complicated form. I'll ask, which position would it be energetically more favorable to be on? But at the moment, if all I'm worried about is writing the structure, it's arbitrary which way that I do it. So I'm just going to choose, for convenience sake, to put the bromine at one of the axial positions, just because it's rather easy to draw. Bromine, since it's kind of brownish in color, I'll go ahead and use red to represent that. Chlorine, since I think the word chlorine comes from a word for green, we'll use green to represent that. So I'll put bromine on an axial position. And then where does that mean I'm going to have to put the chlorine? Well, if I put it in another axial position, then that would actually be pointing down.
think of it this way, that my viewpoint, my visualization point right now is from in front of the paper and I'm looking down on the cyclohexane ring. Well, both the bromine and the chlorine need to point back up at me. So if I put the bromine in an axial position, which means it's pointed up to me, then since I go clockwise around the molecule to get to chlorine, I'll go clockwise around the molecule to get to my next carbon. And the position that's actually pointed up is the equatorial one. So this is one way of correctly representing the molecule that I have on paper. So just so you can follow the models, again, I'm using red for bromine and green for chlorine. The bromine, again, I put at an axial position. And the chlorine has to go at an equatorial position. So I don't want you to memorize this statement that I'm about to make, but it's useful to study. Which is, for vicinal, actually I need one more term in here, I'm sorry. If I have both the substituents pointed the same direction, what kind of term could I use to describe that relative geometry? That you might have learned back in Chem 1C? Cis, that's right. Cis and trans. Just like I know it was kind of a hit and run lecture, but when we talked about nomenclature, when we had two things that were on the same face of a double bond, we also called that cis. And when we had them on opposite faces, we called that trans. That same relative terminology could be used here. So we can call this cis because they're both pointed the same way. And so now to come back to the statement I was going to make, for vicinal cis substituted cyclohexane rings, one substituent must always be axial, the other must be equatorial. Now, this is just one way to represent the molecule. And let me show you what is the trickiest topic of this whole section. The fact that rings can invert. So if I were to take the left-hand carbon and rotate it around, so everybody that's writing, look up just for a moment. So see that I can rotate this around. And notice that we now have two groups that are pointed kind of towards each other. Sterically, that wouldn't be good. So this is a higher energy form of the molecule. We'll also make a Roederer argument later that would also explain why this molecule is higher in energy. Again, chemists' creativity, this is called the boat form of cyclohexane, which I won't write down because we'll never use it. But you just should be familiar that this inversion is possible. Now, if I continue and take the right-hand carbon and twist it around, you could see that if my models cooperate, that I'm able to make another chair form. And notice that the bromine, the one that was in back, the red one, used to be axial, but now in this ring flip, it's gone equatorial. Notice that the chlorine that used to be equatorial has now gone axial. So the two have switched positions. So a ring flip is a conformer of a cyclohexane ring where the substituents change their positions. So a ring flip is an inversion of a cyclohexane ring in which the axial substituents
become equatorial, and vice versa. But you have to be extraordinarily careful how you write a ring flip structure. And I'll show you an example that this will be the hardest example to follow. When we get to the next section on tomorrow on chirality, then you'll understand it a little better. By the way, tomorrow's lecture is not on the exam. This is the last lecture that will be on the exam. That will give you the opportunity tomorrow to ask questions for anything from this that you don't understand. So here's the thing to watch out for. Let's say that I take this definition and blindly operate on it. I take my original structure and just move the bromine from being in the axial to the equatorial position. Move the chlorine from being in the axial to the equatorial position. This is going to be quite a stretch, but can anybody see a problem with the way that I've written this molecule? What's that? It won't match the other molecule. Why not? It has to do with chirality. This is actually the mirror image, because what we had originally was the molecule in which both substituents were pointed up at me. If you flip the molecule upside down, think of it this way. Flipping it upside down, chlorine would occupy the position back, bromine would occupy the position in the front. But that's not what I've got. I've still got bromine in the back position and chlorine in the front position. Here is the molecular model to show what it should look like, because I did a ring flip. And the bromine is in an equatorial position, but it's pointing up. And again, if I flip the molecule 180 degrees around, notice I would have to go counterclockwise to get to where the chlorine is now located. But in this structure, I'd have to go clockwise. It's just like the left and the right hands. They're very similar, they're mirror images, but they're distinct in geometry. So this is an incorrect way to draw the structure. Why? Because the way that I got here was done incorrectly. When I flipped the axial and equatorial substituents, I didn't ring flip, I literally pulled the bromine off and stuck it on the other position. And then same thing with the chlorine. To get from the top structure to this one, I just pulled the chlorine off and stuck it on the other position. That means I broke bonds, that means I made a different molecule. So you cannot just simply swap the two. You've got to keep perspective. So this is an improper ring flip. Because the axial and equatorial positions were simply exchanged. Producing a mirror image molecule. Now, I fully realize this might be difficult to believe just by looking at this. You can look at it and say, okay, well, if you tell me so, then okay. This is why I really, really strongly encourage you to get model sets. How could we write this correctly? We don't worry about where the molecule started. Like, don't worry about the original structure. Refer back to that flat cyclohexane ring. We still want bromine and chlorine to be pointed up, and we still want the chlorine to be, from this perspective, clockwise from the bromine. So let's draw a chair form. and choose one of the positions to put the bromine in. There are three equatorial positions on this molecule that are pointed up. One that's in the back, pointed that way. One that's in the front, pointed that way. And another one in the front, pointed that way. Doesn't matter which one we use, as long as we're consistent in the way that we draw the structure. So let me go ahead and choose this back carbon,
just to match the way that I did it yesterday.
So it's equatorial and pointed up. Now the chlorine, since it's to the right, since it's clockwise, I'm going to write on this carbon. And I want it pointed up, so this time it has to be in an axial position. Sorry, that's a little sloppily written. But look at our structure. Here's bromine in the back. It's in an equatorial position. It's pointed up. That matches what we just drew. And here's the chlorine that's pointed straight up in an axial position, which is the way that we just drew it. Now, the confusion might come in this. You might say, wait a minute. Bromine and chlorine change carbons. Because on the top structure, the top right corner had the bromine. On this bottom structure, that same carbon has the chlorine. Yeah, but what if you did this? Just rotate. That's all that's going on paper, is you've shifted your perspective. So if you label the carbons, you find out that the relative positions are still the same. You know, referring to nomenclature and numbering compounds, let's talk just briefly about how would we number this. Because we've got a few options. Let's say that I assigned number 1 to bromine. Why do you think I might be assigning the number 1 to bromine? Because B comes before C. The bromine would alphabetically become before chlorine. The reason we have to worry about that is if I made chlorine the number 1, I might then number this way to the bromine. If I started here at number 1 and labeled to the chlorine, I would get the same sets of numbers, 1 and 2. Well, since you've got two equal possibilities, remember that one of our rules is you go with the lower one alphabetically. So bromine would get number 1. Then there are two ways I could number around the ring. But if I went this direction, then I would be numbering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Gives a big number for chlorine. But if I label this direction, 1, 2, then that gives a smaller number for chlorine.
So numbering in this fashion is the correct way to do it. If I number the bottom compound, I will still make bromine position 1. Because nothing has changed, just the way I've drawn it has changed. Chlorine would still be at number 2. So this is a correct or a proper ring flip because the relative geometry has been maintained. Now, just to show you that this is not the only possible ring flip form, let's just draw one more example. So let's say that I've made this front position the bromine.
This is done correctly because it's pointed up. The chlorine is clockwise relative to it, so I'd have to draw it at this next carbon that's in front. And you can see that at that position, pointing up, is axial.
Exactly the way that we want it. So this is yet another correct structure. Questions so far? Are you having what the other sections had? One of those oh crap moments?
Yeah.
No, they left the lecture yesterday quite in a tizzy. Because this is all of a sudden getting harder. It's not stuff you've seen in Chem 1A before. But this is exactly what I warned you about, that this was coming. So this is just the start of a whole series of topics that you very likely have never seen before. Again, that's why Friday's lecture isn't on the exam. So if you have questions about this, we have a chance to catch up. Any questions, though? Then let's move to the next example, which is what if the bromine and chlorine are started out pointing in opposite directions? So if cis was the label for when the two were pointed the same way, what will we call this one? Trans, that's right. Substituents are pointed opposite ways. And I'll make the same kind of summary statement, but again, don't just memorize this. Play with the model sets and prove to yourself this is correct. That for vicinal, trans-substituted cyclohexane, both substituents must either be axial or equatorial. And let's see how that would be the case. So again, I'll do the same thing I did with the cis case, where I start with the bromine and just put it where I want to. Since it's pointing up, why not I again take the easier to visualize position and put it on one of the axial positions. Then relative to that, the chlorine is clockwise in front, so I have to move one position around this way, but now the chlorine is pointed straight down. Well, on that next carbon, the one that's pointed straight down is another axial position. So as I said just a moment ago, when you've got a trans and they're vicinal, one must point one way, one must point the other. Let's translate that to a 2D structure. So again, bromine pointed up and chlorine pointed down. Now let's do a ring flip. So I can't remember, did I use this kind of curly arrow on Tuesday? Yes. Yes, I did. Okay, just to highlight, this is not a reaction arrow, it just means I'm redrawing something. So I'm going to draw the ring flip form. If both of the substituents started out axial, then when we do the ring flip, we're going to find they have to become equatorial. So now we can see that bromine is in the back, it's pointed up, but it's in an equatorial position. And then we can see the chlorine is pointed down, but it's also in an equatorial position. The bromine in back, chlorine in front, we've got the right positions. Let's translate this to the flat drawing. And I'll do it like I did before. I'll take the back carbon and show that as an up-pointing equatorial position. Again, if bromine, the chlorine, is clockwise in orientation, then I'm going to go clockwise around the molecule, and chlorine will therefore be pointed down. Now, here's a question that we haven't addressed yet, but I alluded to it earlier.
Which of these two structures that I just drew do you think would be the energetically most favorable structure? The one on the left or the one on the right? I heard a few answers for the right. I don't think I heard left, though. Why would you say it's to the right? You did the read. That's fine. It's not cheating. I want you all to read ahead. Repulsive forces. What do we call that kind of repulsive force of groups bumping into each other? That's the proper term for this specific example. Diaxial interaction. But what's the general term? Steric hindrance. Remember we talked about steric hindrance as why most rotamers have differences in their energies? We still need to come back and talk about ethane, which we run out of time before the exam. Then we'll get it after the exam, because we've got plenty of cases of hyperconjugation coming up. But the real reason that we went over for butane is that the groups are going to bump into each other because those electron clouds are bumping into each other. The same thing happens in a cyclohexane ring. This model set's very deceptive because it draws, or it has everything represented as little sticks. But realize that there are these clouds of electrons around them. And these two carbons are close enough from one side of the ring to the other, that you put anything except the hydrogen on there, there's going to be some of that steric hindrance. Since these are both axial positions, this is called a diaxial interaction. So in cyclohexane rings, diaxial interactions experience steric hindrance. In fact, I'll say it this way. In cyclohexane rings, substitution at an axial position produces steric hindrance due to diaxial interactions. Thus, when possible, a substituent would prefer to be at the equatorial position. Now, at room temperature, there's enough energy generally for that ring flip to continually occur. But later when we talk about equilibrium, we can talk about the energy difference between these two forms. And if we could calculate that in terms of free energy, we could calculate an equilibrium constant to figure out how much of one form would be of one form versus the other would exist at that temperature. We're not there to equilibrium yet, so for the moment, I'll just say that this is the energetically most favored because both substituents are equatorial. Now, it isn't the case where you can just take the substituents and throw all of them in equatorial positions automatically. Because as we just saw, if we have vicinal cis substitution, one has to be axial, one has to be equatorial. So how can you figure out which one wants to be where?
Well, there are energy factors associated with each substituent. And so we could look at a table to see, for example, chlorine would have a smaller repulsive factor than bromine. It's sometimes related just to size, but not always. But bromine would win over chlorine.
So if we go up to our previous example,
again, if bromine has more repulsive force energetically than chlorine, bromine would want to be in the equatorial position.
So this is lower energy.
So questions about how I wrote out the trans versions of the compound, or questions about this axial versus equatorial energy difference?
So with just the little tiny bit amount of time we've got left, I want to show you one other thing that the book mentions in discussing why is it that these chair forms of cyclohexane are energetically more favorable. One reason is, of course, that you achieve that 109.5 degree angle that you want for a tetrahedral carbon.
But here's another trick we can pull. What if I took the molecule and looked along one of the carbon-carbon bonds of the ring? If I visualize it this way, that means I'm looking at a rotamer of that bond. If I did visualize from the front of a cyclohexane ring, what would I see?
Just to keep it generic, I'll label these as A, B, C, D, and I'll visualize along the left-hand bond. So what would I get? Well, writing a rotamer diagram, remember the things in the front join through to the center of the projection. The things in the back do not connect through. And notice the shorthand that I'm using.
I've connected two of the positions, because that's the rest of the ring. What kind of conformation is this? It's a staggered conformation, which if I had to choose between eclipsed or staggered, staggered's the better conformation, isn't it? And if you look at the ring, if all of these were just hydrogens, what form of staggered is this? It's a gauche conformation, because it's one of those local minima of energy. Now, a cyclohexane ring can't be anti. It can never be that conformation. So out of the possible conformations that could form, this is the lowest energy. So on top of the fact that it's got 109.5 degree angles, all the bonds are rotated or oriented so that they're staggered. Now, the very last thing related to this is if we can look along one bond, then realize that if I'm looking at a ring this way, that there's two of these bonds that are parallel to each other. So what if I simultaneously made two rotamer projections? Then it would look like this. So here is the front of the ring, and then here's the back of the ring, and all the other groups we can see are arranged in a staggered conformation. Questions?